Thanks for joining us on the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, our senior pastor, Ray Noah, continued our series, The Gospel of John. His message was based out of John chapter 10 and was all about us being intensely missionary. Now here's Pastor Ray.
I think the fellowship is just a little out of control today, but that's all right. So it's my turn to talk. If you would, find John chapter 10. John chapter 10 in your Bibles. Thank you to Pastor Joel for leading us through John chapter 9 last week. That's what you did, right? Okay, good. And Pastor Lauren Kraft spoke the week before that, so appreciate these guys, and I understand that both of them did a fantastic job. So we're in this series in the Gospel of John. We're at John chapter 10 this morning, and I want to talk to you about missions. Now, this isn't missions convention or missions conference. It's just overflowing in my heart this morning, and it just so happens that this passage really, I think, that we're going to look at today really deals with mission, the missionary heart of God, which we've already seen in the Gospel of John as well, but we're going to circle back to it again today. And fresh off this 17-day trip and 48 hours to get here, it is now 1:30 in the morning in my my time zone clock in my brain, so I am not responsible for what I'm about to say. If I fall over, Linda, Joel, somebody hop up here and just talk for a while, and people will be happy about that. I want to talk about the missional convictions that drive the Portland Christian Center missions vision. You know, historically, God has given us a great impact in world missions, not just under my tenure, but under Pastor Wilson, back under Pastor Swanson, Pastor Indy Davidson, some of you will remember from many, many years ago, the other pastors that were part of that. I mean, this church has had an historic footprint in world missions. But God has given us, as you know, in the last 4 years, just in Africa, some uncommon missional fruit. The fruit that we've seen has been off the charts. And the potential for an even greater global impact has become a driving passion for me. This keeps me awake at night in a good way. My brain is working all the time, figuring out ways, how can we enter into this as a church, into this prophetic harvest? It is a driving conviction for me. But what you may not know are the biblical convictions behind this or underneath this. You might think that, you know, this is planting churches in the foreign soil. It's just the result of some ego need that I have to be successful elsewhere. Or you might think that I just like to travel to Africa. You might think it sounds glamorous. And if you just want to ask any of the guys and gals that go with us, they will tell you it is anything but glamorous. This is not a glamour trip. This is not the result of a missionary wanderlust on my part. It's not. If I'm intensely missionary, I'm going to lay the blame at God. It's God's fault. It is God who has done this in me. God has injected me, and I think the leadership of our church, and I think our church corporately, with a fervor to care for the things that he cares about, his sheep, especially those sheep that are not yet in the fold. John chapter 10, verses 1 through 15, Jesus is describing the good shepherd, and he's referring to himself as the shepherd of the flock, as the shepherd of the sheep. And he's talking about, in a very tender way, how he cares for the sheep. And that's what I would call the ministry of the local church. That's what goes on within the walls or within the ministries of this church. We're caring for the sheep of Christ's flock. But I want you to notice, as you, and maybe next week we'll go back to the first 15 verses, but I want you to jump down to verse 16, where Jesus speaks of sheep that are not yet in his fold, sheep that are yet to join the fold of God. And this is what I would call the ministry of global missions. Jesus is talking, first of all, about the ministry of the local church, and then he switches gears, and in this one statement, he talks about the ministry of global missions, and this is what he says. I lay down my life for the sheep. Very unusual what he says next. But I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I have other sheep that you don't know about. I must bring them in also, and then they will listen to my voice. Then there will be one flock and one shepherd. This is the burning passion of the great shepherd. I have sheep that are not of this fold. I must also bring them in, and then there will be one flock and one shepherd. That is Christ's passion. My mission's passion, our mission's passion, is rooted right here in the Good Shepherd's passionate love for the sheep and his relentless pursuit to bring them into the safety of the fold, especially those sheep that have yet to be reached, the unreached sheep. It's simply out of Christ's passion that our driving missions convictions as a church have developed. There's a theologian by the name of John Stott who said this. He said, missions is the central feature of God's historic purposes. Missions is the central feature, the core feature of the historical purposes of God. And that's true. And that's why Jesus came to earth. That's why God's Son was born. That's the purpose of the incarnation. Jesus was a missionary Messiah. God is a missionary God. It's why he died. It's why he came and was born. It's why he died on the cross. It's at the core of our redemption. It's why he's coming again, and he's going to call a close to missions in the second coming. It's central to who God is and what his purposes are, and that's why missions must be our central feature, our core purpose, our soul, or our priority focus as well. And so I thought it was important enough for us to talk about this today because I want you to understand, to know these core convictions like I do, because I want us to always be zealously focused on what Jesus cares about, his sheep, especially the sheep that are not yet in the fold. And one of these days, if the Lord tarries, and if you're willing, or if you're unwilling, I guess, I will not be your pastor. One of these days, this church, especially the younger people, will be electing a new pastor. I hope it's not anytime soon, so don't get any ideas. I'm not making a prediction. But there will come a day, if Jesus doesn't come back, when there will be another under-shepherd that's guiding this church. And I hope as a congregation, I hope as members of this church, and you make the decision on who your leader will be, that you will always have a pastor that is zealous about missions. Because it is the central feature of the historical purposes of God in this world, that we would always care for what Jesus cares about, reaching the unreached, sheep not yet of his fold. And that's what we call frontier missions. Frontier missions. So there's the ministry of the local church, there's ministry of global missions, and there's ministry of what we call frontier missions, reaching those that have never heard the gospel before. And that's why we do what we do. That's why our teams go to where they go. That's the sole purpose, is taking the gospel to the unreached. As we've said already, we were 17 days in Africa. We're going to go back to some of these pictures that I skipped over, guys. And a small team from our church went with me. We had one of our deacons, Anthony Ketzel, and a former deacon, Bob Vinci, and his son Jeffrey went with us, Michael Wanberg, and Andy Brisky, who's over here, who is a lay volunteer leading our young adult ministry. And so they joined our team, and we were joined by a team from the Vineyard Church in South Carolina. There was a photographer who was an Assembly of God guy from North Carolina. We had the Foursquare Church from Canada represented. One of our missionaries in Ethiopia by the name of Chris Ness, this church supports him, was a part of the team. And then Brooklyn Tabernacle from New York City, Pastor Brian Petrie was with us, and we went to Ethiopia. We went to 10,000 feet up in the mountains of to Gojo, and there we trained 175 of our church planters. They're part of a team that now has grown to about 1,100 church planters through this church, through the ministry of this church, have now gone out in that western central part of Ethiopia, as well as now South Sudan and Uganda. And these 1,100 church planters have started in unreached villages, 1,100 churches. We've now seen 250,000 people that did not know the name of Jesus come to know Jesus Christ and are being discipled in these churches. Incredible missional fruit. We've had, I think, 75,000 of them baptized in water so far. 800 churches have been built. We didn't build them. We didn't pay for them. We paid for a couple of them, but most of these have been done on their own. And so we were up in the mountains training, and then there was an advanced team that went out to the place Linda mentioned, Dire Dawa in eastern Ethiopia, dominated by the Muslim religion. And as Linda said, it's just, you just sense the evil when you're out there. But God has opened a door for us to plant 1,000 churches starting this fall in eastern Ethiopia that I believe will change the equation of what's going on in the Horn of Africa, in East Africa. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in a moment, but this part of Ethiopia, eastern Ethiopia, is along the countries that form up the Horn of Africa, East Africa. There's Sudan on the north, Eritrea, Djibouti, Somalia, some really difficult places, very, very few Christians. In some of those countries, you can count the number of Christians on one hand. If you are known as a Christian, you won't be a known Christian very long. You will be killed. That region, which so much of the heartache and radicalism in the world today is coming out of, that is buffered by eastern Ethiopia, which is being influenced by it and influencing in return. And we believe that the Lord is opening a door to plant these churches there. 100 of those churches will be Assembly of God churches, our denomination. And I believe it will change the equation of what's happening in the world. God is prophetically opening a door for us, Portland Christian Center. And if we will be zealously focused on what God cares about, reaching people that are not yet of his fold, including Muslims, we will change. God will use us to change the dynamic of what is going on in the world today. I talked to a church planner who told me of going into a village, and he led the imam and his wife to Jesus. And they started a small group in their house. And the Islamic community was not happy about that, and so they've kicked this guy out. But God is working among the Muslims in Uganda, and I think this would be true in Ethiopia as well as these other countries. There are mosques being built, paid for by the Saudi royal family. Mosques are being built every 10 kilometers, every 6 miles. And when you're even in the middle of nowhere, as you drive along, you see mosque after mosque after mosque. Well, guess what our church planters say? They say, well, good, the Muslims have built our churches for us. They paid for it for us. All we need to do is cut down the crescent moon and we will put up a cross, and we have our churches already made. That's happening. God is opening a door for us. But we need to be convinced. We need to be convicted and let those missional convictions drive us. And so this morning, I want to talk about 5 missional convictions that are part of my heart that I want to be a part of your heart as well. The first one is this. The foundational conviction is this. Lost people should matter to us because they matter to God. Lost people matter to God. He sees them not as enemies. He sees them as sheep yet to be reached. And they matter deeply to him. And so that ought to become a driving passion for us as well. Matthew chapter 18, verses 12 through 14, reminds us of this conviction that is at the very core of God's being. This is what it says. Jesus told this story. If a man owns 100 sheep and one wanders off, won't he leave the 99 and go look for the one that's lost? And if he finds it, he's happier over the one than the 99 that didn't wander off. So also your heavenly Father is not willing that any one of these little ones should be lost. If lost people matter that much to God, shouldn't they matter that deeply to us as well? I mean, shouldn't they? They should. Listen, you can never look into the eyes of another human being, no matter who they are, without seeing a soul, an eternal soul, so important to God that he sent his son Jesus to pay the price for their redemption. I don't care if it's that neighbor across the street that's irritating you to death, or you see people that are rioting on TV in Ferguson or Maryland, or you see radical terrorists in the Middle East. It doesn't matter. You might not like them, but they matter to God, and he sees them as pre-believers. He's passionately head over heels in love with them, and he wants to redeem their souls, and so we must get passionate about reaching them as well. And that's critical, because how you perceive God perceives people will make a difference in how you perceive people. If you don't understand God's love for them, then most likely you're not going to have God's love for them as well. How God sees people is critically important that we understand that. I don't care who they are, they matter to God. And reaching them near and far is called missions. By the way, God is bringing the unreached. God is bringing missions to our doorstep. Do you know that more and more unreached people groups are moving to Portland? Lynn and I rode home in a taxi last night. We didn't want to torture our associate pastors having to come and get us late last night. And so we rode in a taxi, and we were driven by a Somali man. The third largest Somali immigrant population is right here in Portland. Do you know that you can count on one hand the number of identifiable Christians in Somalia? They're a very tough people group to reach. And yet God is bringing them here. We must be passionate about reaching the lost, no matter where they are, because they matter. Missions matters because lost people matter. And that is the compelling core, friends, of our mission. Out of that, our second driving conviction is that the local church, this local church, is the best conduit for global missions. The church is the best conduit for global missions. Paul said in Colossians chapter 1, verse 27, that God has chosen to make known through the church, through you, through the church, among the lost, the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you. Not you individually here, not you singular, but he uses the plural, Christ in you, Christ in us, the hope of glory. And that's why I say that the local church is the only hope of the world. Some people don't understand that. They might be uncomfortable with that. But it's true, because God has chosen to make known the mystery of salvation through the church, through the body of Christ. We are the megaphone. We are God's megaphone in the world for the gospel. Not only that, we are the best example, we are the most compelling example of what it means in community to live out the kingdom life that people will ever see. People will be attracted to Jesus by what they see going on within the church. We're God's megaphone, we're the compelling example of the kingdom life as it gets fleshed out in the world. The local church is the hope of the world. That's why I am so into planting churches wherever God sends us. Now, I have pastor friends of mine, not in this church, but around the nation, who have seen what we're doing, and they've talked to me. They are part of this, and more of them are getting on board with this. And probably about 12 different ones of them have said to me, Ray, you need to leave Portland Christian Center to go do this church planting thing full time. I mean, this is an apostolic mission that God has given you. You need to let go and to go do this full time. And I say, why? I'm only leading us to do what every local church ought to be doing anyway. Why should I leave this to go tell other pastors to do what I used to do? I want us to be an example as one local church that gets it. We are, Christ in us, we are the hope of the world. Let's just do what all churches should be doing, and maybe we'll inspire some others to get with it and start doing it. I mean, if we can do this, if we can be the fountainhead of planting 1,100 churches in the last 4 years, why can't other churches do that? You know, some churches could, we've taken a region, but there are some churches that have enough people and resources to take an entire continent. You know, some churches maybe don't have the resources that we do, but they could take a village somewhere and make a difference. What if all, however many churches are in America, I think there are 250,000 local evangelical congregations, what if we all got serious about this? What if we all did this? We would change the world within a few weeks. We really would. Missions is the mission of the church. And if we corporately don't do it well, it won't be done well. The church exists for no other purpose than this. If we don't do missions well, all of our buildings, all of our programs, all of the staff, all of our sermons, even the Bible itself are simply wasted resources if we don't do this well. God became man for no other reason than to take the gospel, the good news, to the world. The local church is the best conduit for global missions. The third driving conviction that we have is that missions multiplies the impact of a local church. Missions multiplies the impact of this local church. Some argue that missions giving diverts precious resources away from local ministry. Some people think that you know, we're taking resources, people, time, money that could be used here to win people to Jesus, and we're putting it where it's not as important. I don't believe that. You see, when Portland Christian Center reaches people with the gospel wherever they are, Whether it's in Panama, Central America, we have teams that go down and build schools and build churches. Or whether it's in Brazil, we're going to send a team out, a family out later this month in Brazil to unreach people. If we're reaching people in Brazil and starting churches, or if it's in Ethiopia or the Horn of Africa, wherever we go to plant churches, their response to the gospel there, wherever we go to preach the gospel, their response to the gospel there is this church in a new place. We are exporting Portland Christian Center's DNA to people afar. Our missions effort, our missions giving, our missions going simply honors our local church in seeing that it's worth duplicating elsewhere. I think that's what the Apostle Paul had in mind in Galatians chapter 4, verse 19, when he talked about the church that he planted in Galatia. He said, "I feel as if I'm in labor pains for you, and they'll continue until Christ is fully formed in you." Paul understood that they were following him as he followed Christ, that he was in a way planting himself as he planted churches that would grow up to follow Jesus. I don't know what you think about this, but we are exporting Portland Christian Center to other places. And I think that's a good thing, because I think we're worth planting in other places. I really do. Had a wonderful experience a week ago being in this village called Kokoro in Uganda. 2 years ago, we sent out 26 missionaries, and we were doing the initial interviews for these church planters. Most of them were men. There were a couple of women in the group as well, and I was with some of our team, and we were training the church planters, but Linda and her team were interviewing these new church planters, and they got through all 26 of them, and Linda came to me, and she said, "Ray, this couple that's helped us to translate, there are interpreters during the interview, really sharp couple, and as they listen to these stories, as they listen to the testimonies and the call of God upon these church planters, they said, we feel like God is calling us to leave our lives, to leave our business, to go plant a church as well. Could we do that?" And so Linda came to me and she said, "Ray, we're out of sponsorships. We don't have any more money, but I think there's something special about this couple. Could we send them out?" I said, "What do you mean? Could we send them out?" She said, "Me and you, could we pay for them to go out?" And I said, "Sure, no problem. I don't even have to pray about stuff like that." And so We had been paying on a monthly basis to try to send them out, and we did. And this is an extremely sharp, well-educated couple. Had good jobs. The man was in radio. The wife was in banking, and they left all of that to go to this little village called Kokoro. This is out in the middle of nowhere. It's dirt poor. There's no there, but there was no church. And so they went out there. I've told you this story before. We went out to visit them a year and a half ago, I think it was. And in a place where there had been no church and no Christians, when we went there a year and a half ago, there were now 200 people that know Jesus. They had led 200 people to Christ. We went back 6 months ago because in the year and a half ago visit or the year ago visit, I made a promise that I never make. As I was standing before these people that were worshiping under a tree, I said, "We're going to help you build a church." I don't do that. We don't do that. That's their story. I don't want to have to raise funds to build all these churches for these church planters. But I found myself saying that as I'm standing there talking to these people, and my team's looking at me like, "Is he okay? He just promised to raise money to build them a church." And so I came back here and I told you about it, and we received an offering. And the offering that we received was the exact budget that they had come up with to build this church. And so we helped them to build an outstanding building in Kokoro, Uganda. And this church is so grateful that we gave them life through Jesus by bringing the gospel to them, that they are head over heels grateful for what we've done. In fact, we'll see the picture here if you'll roll it. They have identified us as their spiritual parents. In fact, they copied our logo. And so when you go out in the middle of nowhere, you're going to see Portland Christian Center is in Kokoro Village. I mean, isn't that amazing? And so when we went back to dedicate the church building a year ago, there's the building. They didn't have 200 people anymore, but they had 600 people. And when we were there this Sunday, they had 900 people. And these people are so grateful for the gift of life that we brought to them. 2 years ago, There was no church. There were no Christians. Now over 900 of them belong to Jesus Christ. They're worshiping Jesus. They're just so in love with the Lord, and they're so grateful to Portland Christian Center. To show their gratitude, they began to give us gifts. Last Sunday, they began to bring gifts to us, and they brought fruit, and they brought clothing. In fact, one guy took off his coat, and he gave it to Jeff Vinge. And then they brought chickens. And so far in my trips to Kokoro, there you see one of them, so far in my visits to Kokoro Worship Center, I've avoided having to hold a chicken. All the other people, I get my hands full of stuff so I don't have to hold one. I just don't want to hold a chicken. This time I had to hold a chicken. They got me. And but fortunately, it was a chicken in a bag, which is his head was poking out of it. And someone asked me after the first service, because I didn't say this, they said, "Did you bring the chickens home?" No, we didn't bring the chickens home. We can't do that. So we donated them to another church. You know, they started bringing, at the end of the service, they started bringing these gifts to us. And I thought, we don't need these. I don't need a chicken. I can go to my freezer and get one. I don't need the fruit. They were bringing us what we don't need from all that they have. What a gift of love. What a gift of gratitude. Bob Vinge made the comment that isn't that like what we do every Sunday when we bring our offerings to God? We bring him what he doesn't need. He doesn't need it, but he accepts it as our offering of love and gratitude to him. And that's exactly what they were doing. Such a beautiful display of the eternal gratitude for the gift of new life that Portland Christian Center has planted in Kokoro Village. We are their spiritual parents. They call Linda mom and me papa. And we gave them life. And now they were so proud to say, "We are going to make you proud grandparents, because we're ready to send out church planters that we have raised up from our body." They have 3 or 4 church planters that they've trained that they now want to send out to other unreached villages around Kokoro. And by the way, if any of you are interested in helping us to plant more Portland Christian Centers in Uganda, come see me, because we have a strategy, we have a mechanism for doing that. Portland Christian Center has been planted in a new place, thanks to you, because you are driven by a missions conviction. Our fourth driving conviction is that the priority target of our missions, must be unreached people. I'm not saying it's the only target, but it must become a priority target for us to reach people that have yet to be reached. I have sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them in. I have local pastor friends who insist that planting churches should be focused here in our own backyard, that we ought to be doing it here in Portland. And I don't disagree with that, but they do it to the exclusion of planting churches among the unreached. You can't read very far into the Bible. You can't read the New Testament without sensing that stay and share must morph into go and tell. That's the compelling call of the Bible. That's the compelling call of the New Testament. I mean, isn't it counter to God's heart that there remains those who have yet to hear the gospel once? When so many resources, so much effort is poured into those who have heard it over and over and over again and yet refuse to respond? Now, I'm not saying this is an either-or kind of an equation. I think it's a both-and. But our focus, our priority must be on the unreached peoples of the world. Do you realize that there's only one frontier missionary? That's a person who goes to those who have not heard before, that goes to the unreached. There's one frontier missionary for thousands of other missions ministries that are going to people that are already reached. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do this, that we don't need missionaries in places that have already heard the gospel. I'm just saying that we need to increase the number of missionaries that are going out to the unreached people groups of the world. There are still thousands of people groups, two or 3,000 people groups that I know of, that I've heard about, that have no access to a gospel preaching church in their culture. Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and animists that have never heard the gospel preached through the ministry of a local church. And my prayer for Portland Christian Center is that we would be one church that would lead the way as a local church in putting a very high priority on raising up frontier missionaries and resourcing frontier missions to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. That's the unique task of missions. as opposed to evangelism. Evangelism is sharing Christ wherever you are, but planting the church among people where people groups where it doesn't exist, that is the unique task of Frontier Missions. And I want us to be a leading church in that regard, that we would take the gospel to where it's never been. Jesus commanded us in Mark chapter 16, verse 15, to go into all the world and preach the good news to all creation. Acts chapter 1, verse 8, Jesus said, I'm going to send you the Holy Spirit to empower your witness so that you can go out from Jerusalem to Judea, to Samaria, and where? To the uttermost parts of the earth. Matthew chapter 24, verse 14, Jesus said, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, to all people groups. Not to every person. There's no way we could do that, but we could preach the gospel to every people group, and then the end will come. That's our prophetic assignment, to take the gospel to all people groups, and then Jesus is going to come back. It's clear that God puts the highest premium on taking the gospel to people who have never heard. Isaiah 66, verse 19, listen to this. God promised to send messengers to lands beyond the sea that have not heard of my fame or seen my glory. I love that choir number. It talked about Jesus lifting up his fame and proclaiming his glory. And we have been called his vehicle to do that. And here Isaiah prophesies that God would send us to do that. That's why this church exists. Romans 9:17 says, I have raised you up for this very purpose, to display my power in you, so that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. David prayed in Psalm 67, verse 2, send us around the world with the news of your saving power and your eternal plan for mankind. And that's why now we're going to go to Muslim East Africa, East Ethiopia. 99.7% of the people there are Islamic. As Linda said, you go to those places, you go into the holy city of Harar, the fourth holiest city in Islam is in Ethiopia. And it's basically all Muslim. And you feel the presence of evil. You feel the presence of bondage. Religiously and culturally, they produce this mind-altering drug, a drug called chat. And they chew on this chat, and it alters their mind, and it depletes their souls. And we saw scores and scores and scores of people that are just sitting around numbing themselves, medicating themselves because they're so hopeless on this drug. I couldn't help but walk through the city of Harar going, oh God, people need you in this place. We've got to plant churches here. And so that's why we're going, God willing, God helping us with the resources. We will take the gospel into the heart of evil. And we will plant churches there. Linda mentioned five gates around this holy city of Harar. And as I was looking at those gates, I was reminded of the compelling verse that God has put on my heart that is really one of the driving forces in my commitment to missions. He said to Peter in Matthew chapter 16, he said, right at the gates of hell in Caesarea Philippi, where there were five different world religions, Jesus said, Peter, right here, I will build my church. And the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And that came back to me as we're standing before these gates. I thought, right here in the gates of hell, we're going to plant the church, and hell cannot stop it. With God's help, God willing, we will do it. Let's bend the sending edge, friends, to the unreached. Let's take the gospel to Muslim East Africa. Let's change the equation. Let's see what God will do through one church who is committed to going where he's called us to go. And here's the fifth and final conviction, and we'll end this and come to the Lord's table if our servers want to prepare. The fifth conviction is this. This is kind of the icing on the cake. As we care for God's concerns, God will concern himself with our cares. That's his promise. If we will care for the things that God cares about, God will care for the things that we care about. Let's take care of God's concern. What is God's chief concern? Simply this, that his name be known and praised by all the peoples of the earth. That's why Isaiah 12:4 says this, that we are to make known his deeds among the peoples, and proclaim that his name is exalted. That's our assignment, to make his name known, to make his deeds known among all the peoples of the earth. And when we proclaim his fame, God delights to satisfy our hearts. Psalm 37 verse 4 says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him, and we are most satisfied in him when we are proclaiming his glory and exalting his fame. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Friends, we can have it all. We can have success. We can have significance. And most of all, we can have deep, deep, deep satisfaction if we will get addicted to making Jesus famous among the unreached. I had an amazing experience. I'll close with this, and we'll come to the Lord's table. We were in Kokora Village Church, Kokora Worship Center. Last Sunday, I was getting ready to preach. The service had gone on for 4 hours. And you think you have it rough here. I mean, it was 4 hours. 10 choir numbers. I mean, it was crazy. It was fun. It was crazy. And as I'm getting ready to preach, the pastor, Sylvester, stood beside me. He said, wait a minute. We need to give you an African name. All right, that's fine. And so then he asked the congregation, what shall we name him? And they hollered out a name. Now, before I tell you what it is, I want you to go back about a month ago when I stood before you and I shared about my call to missions when I was 4 years old. My father, who was a pastor, took me to a church service in a different city, and there was a man there, an African, very dark man, I remember. I hadn't seen an African before that, and I don't know what he preached, but I remembered him, and his name was Gideon Bamba. Remember when I told you this story? And I heard that name about 50 years later through somebody else in the church, a missionary in the church. And I went, Gideon Bamba, that's the guy that I heard when I was 4 years old. I think God must have done something in that service to touch my heart for missions. So I call up my father, who's in his 80s and down in Eugene, and I said, Dad, you remember taking me to that service? And he said, yeah, not only did I take you to hear Gideon Bamba, but I took you down to the altar area after the service, and he laid hands on you and he prayed for you. I think that's when God touched my heart. And all I can tell you is this, that since that time, I've had this passionate commitment to make Jesus famous wherever I can. That's why I do what I do. That's what drives me. That's what motivates me here as your pastor. That's why we go to places that nobody else will go to. I simply want to make Jesus famous as much as I can throughout the earth. So I'm standing before these people, and he says, what shall we name him? Now, they're not connected to this story at all. They hollered out, name him Bamba. Gideon Bamba, 4 years old. They say, name him Bamba. I was stunned. It was like, oh my goodness, God, what does this mean? What are you doing? And I turned to the pastor, I said, and I was just surprised, and I was stunned by it. I said, so what does that mean? And he said, that means, Bamba means God creates. God creates. And the Lord spoke to me and was affirmed by one of our guys in that moment, but the Lord spoke to me and said, I'm using you to create my fame in this community. You know, sometimes I go over there and I think, what am I doing? Who am I? It's so hard, you know, preaching and communicating cross-culturally. You know, you don't know if they get it or not. You kind of feel unworthy. And the Lord just tapped me on the shoulder and said, I'm using you to create my fame throughout the earth. And he's using you, Portland Christian Center, to create his fame throughout the earth. So I'm just going to call you Bamba as well. This is Bamba Christian Center because God is using us to create his fame in among places, among people that have never heard before. Now listen, here's what I want you to know. That if you will join me in getting addicted to his fame, if you will allow these five missions convictions to drive your passion as well, you and I in this church will have the deep, deep satisfaction of knowing that God has used us to create his fame in place after place after place where people have never heard his name before. Let's get intensely missionary and let's stay that way. There's a missionary by the name of Henry Martin who was missionary in India. He left India to travel to Iran. And on the way there, bringing the gospel to Iran, by the way, there's an amazing underground church that is growing in the nation of Iran. You know, it's not above the radar at this point, but thousands and thousands and thousands of Iranian young people have come to know Jesus. They're underground. And when this lifts, you're going to see an amazing revival that's taking place there. Henry Martin brought the gospel in the 19th century to Iran. But he died at a very young age. He was 32 years old when he gave his life for the cause of missions. But he said this. He said, the closer that we get, he said, the spirit of Christ is the spirit of missions. And the closer we get to Jesus, the more intensely missionary we will become. So my challenge to you, Portland Christian Center, is let's get and let's stay intensely missionary, and we will know the deep satisfaction of making Jesus famous.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.